Well, as always, let's get started first from the first-time caller line. Lewis is in Miami on Coast to Coast AM for Open Lines. Lewis?
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Perfectly.
Hey, how's it going? So nice to talk to you. It's as you already know, I'm a first-time caller. I was wanting to, if I could, kind of address the comments that I believe his name is Walt from Allentown.
And yeah. Walt will love the fact that he's become controversial and much talked about. So just go ahead.
It's funny because even before I was thinking that that was likely the case, before I mentioned it. But
he's a very fair guy. I got to say, he's
sure.
I say that only because he's very provocative. So I appreciate
right,
that.
Right, right. Well, I mean, and I don't mean this to be like pejorative, but he sounds like a little bit of a militant atheist sort of.
Here's what I hear, Walt. I hear, get off my lawn. That's what I hear from
right.
Walt. It'd be the neighbor that I'd be scared of.
Right.
Well, go ahead.
He made a point that I think is good to look at. So he says, for instance, how could a God, Jehovah, Yahweh, God say, you should not take someone's life, but then he goes on to take someone's life. And then he used a very interesting phrase. He said that a deity or God could be anthropomorphized, or, where we create, instead of being created in the image of God, which would be Imago Dei, you could create God in your image. That would be Imago Vir.
Right.
So, what we have to look at is, for instance, if God is the creator of the planet Earth, let's just say,
okay,
and he decides, I'm going to destroy this and create a new heaven and create a new Earth, which is actually what is mentioned very explicitly in the book of Revelation. Well, then that's his earth to create and or destroy. But if you destroy the planet, it's not your planet to destroy because you're not the one who created it. So what the point that I'm trying to make by saying this is that we cannot, number one, make God in our image. But another thing is this is the hubris of us as humans, as mankind. You cannot put yourself in the position of God to judge,
right?
Because if God is the judge of what is right and what is wrong, what is sin and what is not, then when we try to do that and say God has sinned, well, wait a minute. Now you just made yourself God.
Well, let's peel the onion a little bit. First of all, I would say I never have in my life. I was raised not to use what we call God, he language, because I think the divine is so much bigger than a pronoun. And so even by using he, we start to kind of do that reduction where we are anthropomorphizing something that is just so enormous, so ineffable that we can't really understand it. So that's one of the ways, very subtle way, which we do that. And we make God more human-like by referring to God as he. And that goes back a long way. As far as your point about Imago Dei, yes. But remember what has often been said, that all theologians imagine God as just like them, but with a deeper voice. And you almost can't help but start there, right? I mean, that's the limitation of the human imagination versus the ineffability of a divine. So it's a forever struggle. It allows atheists and agnostics to be very well armed in these conversations, because it's easy to poke holes in the concept of faith or belief in something that you can't see. But I always look at it the other way around. I think it's the lack of their imagination, not too much imagination on my part. Because I experience the divine in so many beautiful ways. Even the very concept of a miracle is not that something supernatural happened or that the laws of physics were violated, but the word miracle itself just means something amazing to see. I hit this all the time on Coast to Coast. And I think that that's part of, that's where I live. That's how I look at the world. And that is, in its own way, a new creation all the time. When I can get beyond what I think I'm seeing and really focus on the splendor that is around us, it's a new creation every day. I wish it were more profound than that, but there you go. That's all I got. Yeah. Thanks to you, Luis. I appreciate that. Let me go to east of the Rockies. Chris is in Coastal Bend, Texas, on Coast to Coast. Chris?
Great pronoun segue for me, Ian. I was wondering if you were familiar with the book, The Passion of Mary Magdalene.
I know lots of Magdalene stories. I don't know if I've ever seen that book in particular, but tell me more about it.
Okay, well, it's a book that languished in the little free public library for weeks. Nobody wanted to touch it, you know, but it's about Mary Magdalene being a Celtic lass and being captured and then being brought to the Holy Lands and being made a prostitute. And it's just a wonderful, historical fiction.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give away too much. Well, I could.
But it's a novel, right? I mean, so we're just so we're
big,
clear.
Fat novel, over 1,000 pages, and nobody hardly wants to do a book 1,000 pages.
Yeah, that's very interesting. No, I like historical fiction, and I like novels that take something familiar and twist it.
Open-minded enough to read it, which like I said. The Christians down here didn't want to touch it. It was like, ooh, no, taboo.
Well, there's a kind of irony to that, though, because there is zero evidence that Mary Magdalene was a prostitute. Zero.
Well, this is, fiction. They just
No, I get it. But, I mean, in some ways, the idea of attaching her to the figure of a prostitute was a way of invalidating her. And so it's interesting to me that in this book, which celebrates the passion of her, the suffering of Mary Magdalene, that it falls back on that trope when...
Well, she was redheaded, too.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Christ up in us, in the Scandinavia area. Who knows where he went?
Well... Maybe, but I mean, there's redheads everywhere, and they're all dangerous. We all know that. And a redhead, just like it is in nature in other animals, a red hair is a sign of beware. So I'm married to a redhead, and I know this for a fact. And when people say, "What about strawberry blondes?" I say they are merely redheads with silencers. They're just as dangerous, but they're a little more insidious. So be careful. But I will look for that book, and it's a great story anywhere you read it, and I do like the Gnostic Gospels and the apocryphal texts about Mary Magdalene. The stories that they tell are always good. I think we have time now to Cornelius in Louisiana on Coast to Coast. Cornelius,
hey Ian. Well, I tell you that Gina, she'll check in. You'll be right up. You just stay on the line. So
She's married. Gina. She's married, Cornelius. Just remember.
No.
You don't have a shot. Cornelius.
No.
And even I'm not even sure. I've met her. We have hung together several times. Even if she were single, you wouldn't have a shot. I'm just telling you.
No. Look, okay. I wanted to tell a good story and a bad story. I was telling Gina. I lost love, so I made a coast-to-coast connection, and you were talking about coast-to-coast paranormal and all like that. And seeing
paranormal date, yep.
But anyway, from 40 years ago when I was at Louisiana Tech University studying and stuff, and so one of her relatives said, well, had you looked and seen if you could find Cornelius White? And so she started doing some things because she's a was a computer major, and she's excellent in computers. So she looks up, and she finds where Coast to Coast was helping me try to pay a medical bill and stuff.
That's nice.
That's how she found me, was through Coast to Coast. So that's the Coast to Coast connection.
So have you rekindled an old flame?
That's what I'm saying. Out of 40 years. Now, this
cool.
is 40 years ago from 79 and stuff. So that's,
how are you holding up in those 40 years, Cornelius?
Not too well, Ian. We ain't going to go into all that. But look, okay. Let me tell you a bad thing.
All
Somebody
right.
has taken my name and Cornelius White in Alexandria, Louisiana, and I have this theme, God, Guns, and Gold, Bible, Bullets, and Beans. So they've made T-shirts, and they're saying that it's for me. So I'm just telling the Coast audience, do not click on that or whatever. And I hate when people use things and then say, well, we're going to give this to Mr. White. So it's that's not – don't
that wouldn't be cool. Don't do that.
And she found that out. So I said, I'm not online or nothing like that. I don't do emails or tweets or anything like that.
Okay.
I've got a simple landline and an address, and that's it.
All right. But, well, I accept that, and I hope the warning goes out there so the money doesn't go to the wrong people. It doesn't go to criminals misrepresenting themselves. Next thing you know, they're going to call and start flirting with Gina, just like you, and pretend that they're Cornelius. So,
you
know.
Thank you, Ian.
We'll see you, buddy. Blue Diamond is in Iowa on Coast to Coast. Whereabouts in Iowa are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Good. Whereabouts are you right now?
I am almost to Council Bluffs.
Okay. And Blue Diamond, because you're hauling almonds, or what are you doing?
No, that's my CB handle.
All right.
Everybody calls me the diamond in the rough because I don't look like I fit in this industry.
What do you look like?
I'm 5'7", blonde hair, green eyes, and I look like a tourist driving a truck.
All right. I accept that. And so it's open lines. Where are you going to take us?
I was calling in about the Egyptian giant and proof about the Egyptian giant, and you kind of touched a little bit on Ramses, and I was wondering if you know about the Temple of Ramses.
Well, you'll have to be more specific what you mean about the Egyptian giants. What do you mean about that?
So I am a student of Dronvallo Melchizedek. Like I spoke before, I study the baptism of fire, the Merkaba. And one of the things that he taught about was the ancient Egyptians and the statues in Egypt where there is a giant pharaoh and the woman beside the pharaoh is really small.
Right.
And there were different sizes of statues in different areas of Egypt that show different sizes of men and women. And he taught about this as a level of consciousness and that these different size heights are associated with specific abilities that humanity, like different human species, had at that time. And it showed our level when we used to be at a higher operating level. Like in the Old Testament, when Moses took the Jewish people out of Egypt from slavery, and Aaron entered into the promised land, there were giants in the promised land, and it scared him. And even the fruit on the trees were huge. This is a sign, I believe that the statues of Ramses and all of the temples are proof that these people did exist, and that it shows that humans on this life forms on this planet have evolved over time, being at different levels of consciousness.
Well, see, now that's what you kind of confused me there, because I would accept the idea that the relative size of certain figures over others in statuary is intended to be a representation of somebody as being a mental giant, right? As being elevated. I would accept that. We actually use a similar structure in some of our statuary today, which is highly disputed, but where other people are, our American heroes are pictured as being larger than life, and the people around them or behind them are more naturally sized. So that's not terribly surprising. But then are you really implying that then you're saying that there were giants in the promised land that Aaron saw them? Where's your text for that? Where do you get that from?
It's in Deuteronomy. I believe it's in Deuteronomy. I don't have my Bible in front of me. No. I'm driving down the road.
Yeah, that wouldn't be Deuteronomy. But I'll have to look for that.
In Leonardo da Vinci's Vitruvian Man, that came from Vitruvius's writings also. Leonardo had a Vitruvian Man that shows the next level of consciousness that we are going to. The current one that shows Vitruvian Man being the dimensions that we are now, that is the common medicine man image.
Okay. I'll have to look into that. I've heard a very different story for the Vitruvian Man, but you give me something to look up after I get off the air, and so I make notes almost every time I'm on Coast to Coast when somebody offers something which challenges how, at least what I've seen in scholarship. So thank you for that heads up. Drive carefully, and I will look forward to seeing where the rest of the... This night's just flown by. We got like half an hour left. We have to make the most of that. So jump in, if you would, at when I give you the numbers coming up in just a moment, and we'll make the most of it between now and the top of the hour. And then tomorrow night, Lisa Gar is going to be back on again. Also one of my favorites on Coast to Coast. And she's got some very cool stuff. Find out more about all the upcoming shows at coasttocoastam.com. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. And it is part of our theme, right? Going underground, lost cities and ancient tombs was our guest in the first 2 hours. If you missed it, go back and catch it on Coast Insider. So easy to sign up. Find out more at the website at coasttocoastam.com. I did a little unearthing of information myself. So the trucker had mentioned that Aaron had gone into the promised land, and I knew that wasn't true. At least not according to the biblical record. There may be another account somewhere, which is why I asked her what her basis was for that. Neither Moses or his brother Aaron were allowed to see, Cana. They were not allowed to go into the land because they were they had transgressed. And so Aaron dies, I think, on the mount, actually, in one of the accounts. And this things you brought up about the giants, that's an interesting story in and of itself. It's in the book of Numbers. And what the account is actually is when they sent spies ahead, right, to look at what their forces were going to be like that they were facing when they went to take the land of Canaan, which was promised to them by God, as the story goes. They came back with the report that the land was rich, it was beautiful, it was everything they'd ever hoped for. They brought back leaves, clusters of grapes. They brought all sorts of things back to show just how rich the land was going to be with produce, etc. But then they also said that the forces that they would be facing would be unbeatable. And it was this negative tone, which was described in hyperbole. So according to the biblical record in Numbers, it says that these men were all of great stature. We saw giants. We were like grasshoppers. And you can't really separate those two things out. You can't say, oh, no, they saw giants, like real giants. They saw something formidable, and they felt very small compared to them. Obviously, the dimensions of they were giants, we were the size of grasshoppers, not, I think, the point. I mean, I think the language is kind of artful. But it is interesting to note that there have been many times in history when groups of people have grown taller and bigger. We know this is true for, you know, the Goliath story, that he was a very tall, very big guy. And that the idea of warriors, just like they are today, being of enormous size, we tend to think of our warriors in that way related to sports, but it's the same idea. So no surprising, though, that they were facing perhaps even really, really big people, but they weren't grasshoppers compared to them. And of course, they won. So they had a little help from the divine as they went into the land of Canaan, but that's how it works. So that I think that's the story she was alluding to. And I continue to be very interested in the subject of giants myself, although I just always approach it just a little bit less like a fairy tale and a little bit more like the reality of what we live in today. And there are giant people that roam the earth now, even compared to how tall we are as, you know, as an average person that has gotten taller. There's still people that are always going to be super big. And they fascinate to this day. We'll get to your calls. We'll find out what's fascinating you for Open Lines next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. I expect open lines. Monica is in Oregon on Coast to Coast, and I say go Ducks.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
Hey, how are you doing tonight? Hey, I can't get over that you played the David Bowie, the Underground song here just a few minutes ago.
It's funny. Yeah, it's been a while.
I know, right? That's funny. We're having to have some plumbing works done, and I was giving the plumber a bad time, like, get through the labyrinth, get through the labyrinth.
That was funny.
Anyway,
yeah.
I wanted to set us in the mood for Thanksgiving.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, so I just wanted to brag about what I like to do.
Okay.
Is it, I like to get our turkey going here the night before, like to baste it with butter, rosemary, sage, and thyme, get her in the oven.
Yep.
And then, you know, all through the night, you know, the house permeates with that scent of turkey going. And
what do you cook it at? You're doing the low and slow method. What do you go, what's the temperature?
Oh, we will set the temperature roughly about maybe 195 to 200 degrees roughly throughout the night.
Right. No, that's kind of that's a great temperature for people who want to cook low and slow. And then you turn it up later on when you're going to really cook it up, right?
Yes, I love to. And I serve the neighbor. I serve the neighbor, you know, in need, whomever, if they don't have anything else going on. And I love the happy smiles on their faces. I just love it.
And well, I think that's delightful.
That's what I enjoy doing.
Well, that's a great way to get us thinking about Thanksgiving. And I love that low and slow method, too. And so that's very inspiring. I hope other people think about that. Ron is in Michigan on Coast to Coast. Ron?
Hello, Ian. Our Veterans Day is coming up Thursday. And in that theme, I'm giving you this call. But Colin Powell, his passing, he died of complications of Agent Orange. He could not even admit that, which could still save thousands of Vietnam veterans who may be suffering from the same things that he died of. But his career began in Vietnam. I'm a Vietnam veteran myself. He was the first officer sent to investigate the My Lai massacre. After
I didn't know he was the first one. That's interesting. I know that story very well. I hadn't heard that he was the first officer on the scene.
Fact check me on that, please. But he said there was nothing wrong there. Everything was hunky-dory. Continue your genocide. A year later, a soldier who was there who took photographs of the massacre, and they were published in Life magazine, and all the world to see that we were committing war crimes on a mass scale.
Okay, first of all, that photographer's name was Ron Ridenour. He was an Army photographer. And he had taken the photographs with his own personal camera, which he brought with him while he was shooting for the military. I don't think that was that there, I see no evidence. I've studied this very closely. Where do you get the idea that Colin Powell said all hunky-dory continue with the genocide? Where, why do you say that?
Because the investigation went nowhere. He continued. We continued in our policies. Lieutenant Colonel Hackworth, he said, when I asked him a question about the My Lai massacre, he said there were thousands of My Lai massacres.
There were.
That were never reported. But here's the thing.
Wait a second. This is really important. I think this is really good. We're talking about the Mears. You're talking about General Mears' investigation, the Mears report that came out afterward. It came out some time afterward, and the massacres did change Army training. And to the degree that it could, what they also changed was who could qualify for OCS. And it changed because it was recognized that Lieutenant Calley really had no right to be an authority figure because he wasn't trained well enough, and that he was too susceptible to not being able to resist an illegal order from Captain Medina. So there was a lot more moving parts than somehow Colin Powell walked in and said, yeah, keep going, because I don't think that's true.
There were, yeah, but to continue his career, the next place I remember him turning up was in the Nixon White House at the time of Watergate. And in the book, Watergate, I forget the whole title, but by Lamar Waldron, he contends that Nixon was getting payoffs from Santo Traficante, from the Golden Triangle. And Colin Powell was in that White House. Alexander Haig was there too. He said he saw the payoffs. Colin Powell didn't say anything about it, but there was a heroin epidemic going on in Vietnam. I saw it, and it came back to the United States. Okay, so yeah, we can't put the finger on it. He knew about it. He covered up. He allowed heroin trafficking. But then throughout his career, covering up war crimes, allowing the Bushes to come in.
Wait. But you don't have that he covered up war crimes. I've met the guy. I'm looking at his autograph right now. I know you're convinced that he's done all these evil things, but it's all based on where he was, not what he did, and your summations from that. You may be right, but I prefer to go with evidence when we're going to accuse somebody of covering up war crimes. And he may have, but evidence is not the fact that just because he took a job, a low position in the Nixon White House, and then later resurfaced again in the Reagan administration. But I've got some other people to get to because they're hanging on, so try and get as many people as I can. Mason is in California on Coast to Coast. Mason?
Hi. I hope this topic isn't too lightweight, but I'm really into music, and I like bumper music, talking about bumper music and such.
Good. Go for it, man.
I had called earlier this year, and I got nervous. Chickened out. You did an interview regarding a music documentary, and during open lines I was going to call, but as a radio guy, is it bad if bumper music is too on point, do you think?
Why?
I don't know. I just I'm sorry, I'm just nervous.
Well, no, it's okay, but why would it ever be bad that a bumper was on point? I mean, that's kind of like my signature.
I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. I think obvious is relative to the listener. I think that's a good point. So I always try to have a mix. The slightly more obscure, the subtle, and then a couple that are almost like, it's like a law. You kind of have to play it, so.
On a side topic, do you have an email address for listeners?
Nope. I'm available in social media, and find me on Twitter. I've long since given up a public email address, so nope. But you can find me there, and I'd love to hear from you, and I hope I do. Let me I got my homework set up for me already, but I don't mind following up on subjects, and I'll take a look at more of the Colin Powell stuff too. After I get off the air, but let me grab, who else do we have that we have time for? Pete is in Charlotte on Coast to Coast. Pete?
Ian, how you doing this evening?
Doing great. Where are you going to take us?
Hey, that was such a heavy show. I'm glad they threw a little music in. I was going to shift the beaten path for a second.
Go for it.
Colleges, hey, here's a suggestion for a bumper record. How about Flying Saucers Rock and Roll by Billy C. Reilly? And I wanted to ask you, if somebody wanted to listen to your old air checks, what would they punch in online?
Good question. Well, for Coast to Coast, of course, it's the Coast Insider. If you mean from my rock and roll days, there's some stuff on YouTube from when I was at 103 KDF in Nashville. All I can say is, don't judge me too harshly. I was having too much fun. So
you have a very encyclopedia-like knowledge of rock and roll. See, I was there from the beginning. I'm a lot older than you guys, but I'm going to say, judging from what I heard from you, you probably came of age in the 70s, I'm going to say.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right on. Yep.
So you've seen it all then, brother.
Well, I what I haven't seen, I go back and I research and I ask older people about. So I try to add to that all the time. But thank you for the comment. Let me go to Scott, who's in Indy on Coast to Coast AM. Scott?
Hey, Ian. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, man.
I want to circle back to the construction field and artifacts. And to give you a little background, I'm a 50-year-old man whose father, grandfather, and all had been in construction. And I was on a survey team for years. And to give you an idea of what truly happens if artifacts are actually found, in reality, most of the time those things are bulldozered over because the private companies don't want to shut down construction and incur the costs of that.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, cost and insurance drive so much more than most people realize. Go ahead. You got a quick thought?
Oh, no. Just, I know that there's a very well-known music venue that sits on top of a former Native American village.
Right.
I've talked to one individual that one time put a bucket from a backhoe through the head of a perfect mastodon skull.
Oh, really?
That way they didn't have to shut down construction.
Right. I've heard of this. It happens in England, too, where they come across Roman sites in very compacted areas, and they know if they come across it, that means years of delays, and they'll be kicking dirt over that like, oh, no, didn't see anything. I've heard that to be true. I wonder how often it happens, but yes. Mike is in California on Coast to Coast at the time we have left. Mike?
Hey, Ian.
Hey. I
haven't talked to you in a while. Hey, with the Giants thing, have you looked into Gary Wayne in the Genesis 6 project?
The Nephilim? Is that what you mean?
I'm sorry?
You're referring to the Nephilim?
Well, no, it's more than that. I mean, Gary Wayne he's a Christian, first and foremost. But he said theology and ancient myths, mythologies, and all of the ancient civilization, all that. He wrote a book. It took, I can't remember, 10 years or so or more, a few thousand pages, all footnoted. He's a great interview.
I may have interviewed him. I'm trying to remember whether I did talk to him at one point. He's a secret societies guy.
Yeah, but it's all based in Genesis 6 and the Giants.
Right.
So he's great on that. And throughout the Bible, I mean, going back to Genesis 6, they're talking about Giants. So.
Well, yeah, but again, Giants, we just got to... It seems an odd thing to get literal over, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. I understand what you're saying.
Right.
I'm just saying he is
a Nephilim guy. He is a Nephilim guy. So the Nephilim from Genesis 6 is kind of the origin of the the giant story too. So I'll have to look that up. And first of all, I have to look at him. And talk to him. I'm so old now. I can't remember. I'm sorry if I did. People remind me all the time about you. Remember that show you did? Nope. Which is kind of glorious, which means I can do the whole show all over again and enjoy it for the first time. It saves me money on Coast Insider. But most importantly, I will look into that, and I regret not being able to get everybody on. Thank you for holding on, those who did. Open lines will come up again this time next week. I'll be back on later on this month, too, and I look forward to chatting with you. In the meantime, remember, Lisa Gar is coming up tomorrow night. She's got a very cool show, and you can find out about all the great upcoming shows, too, on Coast to Coast. And to Daniel, if he's listening in Wichita, you're still in my thoughts, bud. Enjoyed our conversation earlier this week on the phone. And to everybody else, Deus te amat. Even you, Walt, and I do too.